You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
The JSC has closed its doors for another day, so it's time for the 5 o'clock shadow. And as always on a Thursday, I speak to Viv Govender from Rand Swiss in Johannesburg and David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities, currently in Boston. David, how was your trip from New York to Boston? Any problems? Or you went on the train, didn't you?
Of course. I went on the train. I'm back in New York at the moment. I came back on Monday, so I'm back here. But nothing's changed. Still a very confused northeastern United States. It's you know, I'm a prolific watcher of the news.
Yes.
And, it's obvious that Mr. Trump is in a very difficult position. He's stranded in the middle, criticized by the right and criticized by the left, and not quite sure how to appease even the center. So the center is certainly not in his favor, but he's just like one of those bunnies that you see at a fair. You know, you shoot it, it goes the other way. You shoot it, it runs, keeps reversing. You know, he's I think, very a lot of confusion at the moment. And I'm surprised that markets are holding up as well as they are, you know, considering the circumstances. But I think people here are getting very impatient. And, you know, want to know what his thinking is, and that's not easy to establish. So it's very difficult. I was hoping, I hope Lindsay doesn't phone, or I don't have to speak to Viv. I can sitting here just looking
at. Did you hear that, Viv? He didn't want to speak to us. Did you note that? Even David Shapiro, even the implacable David Shapiro, Mr. Media himself, doesn't want to talk about it. That is how it is affecting
that's
people.
That's how confusing, yeah.
I agree with
Lindsay,
you.
Lindsay, you know, that's how absolutely confusing it is. And, you know, clients ask you, well, what do we do? And, you know, from one minute to the next, it's all, when I say it's all over the place, you know, you wake up in the morning and markets can go up and down many times during the day. Yesterday we had a good day because there could have been some talks. Today there's no talks and so on. Anyway, I just have the last word is that just before I came on to this, I was looking at YouTube and I wanted to get the Holy Grail extract of you know, Monty Python's Holy Grail YouTube piece of when they go to a castle and they want to seek shelter for the night, and it's a Frenchman's castle. I remember, and he starts insulting them that they smell like, you know, their mom smells like endelberries or whatever. It is hysterical. and you know, the whole negotiation, and this is just Trump looking up at the Iranians, and the Iranians, you know, sending down chickens, dead chickens and cows, and pelting them with anything they can find. And, you know, it just reminds me of the futility of where we are at the moment.
It's futile, but it's unfortunately a little bit more dangerous than a few smelly chickens in a Monty Python film. And I know the clip you're talking about is still a classic. Viv, while David's looking that up, it is very dangerous indeed, because it's a war that was conceived and initiated on the whim of a person who's never had anything to do with being a soldier, has no military experience, and thinks he knows everything. So even when someone that, like Pete Hegseth, who's his Secretary of War, as he calls it, but still legally the Secretary of Defense, also hasn't really got the experience to be where he is. And so therefore they go in blindly because, as they say, they've got the best military in the world. You can have the worst military in the world and the best strategy, and you've still got more of a chance. Viv, it's out of control now, don't you think?
Yeah, look, I mean, the thing is that the problem is that they do have the best military in the world. That's the temptation, because you have this immensely powerful weapon. You can do anything you want to militarily. Virtually, and that's the temptation that Trump has, I think, has kind of gotten into. The problem is that, as you mentioned, strategically, there's very little way out of this thing. The Straits of Hormuz, it's going to be very difficult to close that off without getting boots on the ground, because you need to basically stop, you know, these small drones, these waterborne drones, or even just flying ones. There's ones that's basically unmanned boats that can go on the water, that you need to stop that, and you need to get on the shoreline of Sandwich Islands, as well as on maybe the Iranian shoreline as well, to stop that. you also have, you know, in fact, the Iranians now, strangely enough, are in a better fiscal situation in some ways than they were before the war, because not only are they selling a little bit more oil than they were before, but they're selling at a significantly better price. And also their big allies in Russia are effectively, you know, I think the Russians are pretty much out of the stranglehold, you know. They're making a fortune with oil. They're making a fortune with fertilizer at the moment. And that I think is a big issue. And then finally, I mean, they should be keeping an eye on what's happening in China, because the Chinese probably are looking at this and waiting for the Americans to get boots on the ground, get really tangled up in a quagmire, and then suddenly Taiwan's in trouble. And if you think the problem with oil is bad, wait till you see what happens when you take out 90% of the world's, you know, high-end chips. I mean, the world becomes a very different place. And all because, like I said, I think Trump and maybe Hexit, but I think Trump mainly, because we want to gather most people in the administration, with a few exceptions, were very much against this thing. They don't know why Trump did it. They don't know exactly what made him do it at this point in time. Basically, yeah, it's a massively self-inflicted wound that he's done here. He's probably going to lose the midterm elections by a lot more, possibly lose the Senate. And we're certainly going to lose this Congress, possibly lose the Senate. He loses those two houses. And given all of Trump's issues, I expect the next few years of his life are going to be a lot of interrogations in front of Senate committees and Congress committees, you know, like Bill Clinton was about the Monica Lewinsky thing, you know, about Ronald Reagan was, you know, about Iran-Contra. But taken to another level, it's going to be a very, very tough period for him for the next couple of years, given stuff that he's done here.
David, is anyone in New York or on any of the channels that you watch or any of the pages that you read, is anyone saying anything about Trump's health? Because it looked really, really bad when he was at that GOP fundraiser last night. I don't know where it was, but it was somewhere in Washington because he's back now. He looked awful and was slurring so badly.
Surprisingly not. You know, nothing's been like that. And I'm just surprised that everybody's been so calm, that they're just asking questions, but no direct criticism around him. It's coming in there. You get it in places like I read The Atlantic, or you read The Free Press, or you read maybe The New York Times and places like that. You know, there's massive criticism, but nothing around his health. But it's he pins the blame now on Pete Hegseth. You know, he put him in front of the firing squad by saying, oh, well, Pete came to me with a few generals, you know, worried about the nuclear bomb, and they were short distance away from doing it a short time, you know, and poor old Pete. Funny enough, Pete Hegseth is a lot more articulate when he's asked to speak than Trump. You know, if he's put in front of a mine, he was a media person. So he's pretty articulate, and he's, you know, his mind is well framed on the arguments, but you can see that Trump is floundering. You know, I don't think he was fully familiar with he couldn't really make a decision and said, okay, I'll go with you boys, you know, let's bomb the hell out of Iran. So that's what it's come down to. But he's struggling to backpedal. You know, he's struggling to get himself out of this quagmire. And Lindsay, the other thing is, I wait for someone on the Democratic Party to rise. You know, and there's no one coming through who's a powerful voice. Chuck Schumer certainly not, or Hakeem Jeffries, you know, on the House side of that. They're not the personalities that can actually stand up and really swing the Democratic Party. Even though Viv is correct, I think he's going to be swamped in the midterms should things continue like this. But that's at a different level. You know, it's a state level, it's at a individual state level, or alternatively, maybe in the House or Senate. But you need the cabinet. You need a strong leader who can actually get the vote for president. And no one's come across there. There's still a lot of dissension within the Democratic Party itself.
How long can Viv, I'll put this one to you, because David's surprised that the markets have held up so well. How long can markets hold up so well? S&P, I look now, down 0.7%. Oil price, $106, $107 a barrel. Every single economist worth his or her salt is now putting out their predictions for 2026. Brave people, if the oil price goes here, then inflation in the United States will go to 4.7%. All those little numbers, which of course are completely spurious, because we don't know what the war is going to bring or how long it'll take to bring it. But Viv, at some stage, someone's going to say, you know what, everything's negative now. The big tech companies are getting hit because children are depressed, that sort of thing, because of that lawsuit that came to fruition last night in Los Angeles. Everything is suddenly negative. Is it going to crack at some stage, i.e. more than 0.64% like we're seeing now on the S&P?
Almost certainly. Look, I mean, one thing to understand, of course, is that it's going to be very, regional as well. If just look at the differential between, say, for instance, the oil prices in the U.S. versus oil prices in the Middle East. You know, it's quite a massive differential. And that basically comes through, like, Indian oil prices are significantly higher than U.S. oil prices. So India, Asia, much more badly affected. So you're looking at places like Philippines, state of emergency, Thailand, they basically say work from home. You talk about rationing of fuel, et cetera, that's possible out there. These places are being much more affected. The U.S. might have high inflation. It might have, say, 7-8% inflation, but they had that, you know, with the Biden administration, 9% of the highest. It's not really going to be much more than an irritation. But this places in the world, yeah, this is going to be existential, especially in Asia and in Africa as well. Because, I mean, we talked about it before we started, but the fertilizer situation is horrendous. And what... somebody phrased it, I think it was a New York Times podcast, somebody phrased it, they says, what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to find a price for oil that's going to destroy something between 10 and 20% of global demand. Oil is a very inelastic commodity. You have to raise prices quite significantly to drop demand between 10 and 20%. What's going to happen if you do that is that places like China, Europe, and definitely the US are going to be able to afford it much better than places in, like, you know, for instance, India or, you know, some other, you know, poorer countries in Africa. And what's going to happen is that you're going to find a lot of oil being diverted from these places to the places that can pay the money, number one. Number two, when it comes to fertilizer, we are going into, springtime in the Northern Hemisphere. Look at a world map. See how much of the world is in the north and how much of the farmland is in the north. You know what I mean? It's quite a bit. And then you're going to find these places not being able to get enough fertilizer, maybe under-fertilizing their crops. Lower yields.
It's sowing season, Viv. I live in a rural area, yeah, and all the tractors are out now. They're ploughing the fields and the seeds are going in, and for that they need fertilizer, and it's being choked off, as you quite rightly say. Yeah. Food prices will go through the roof if it continues.
Yeah. Exactly. And again, some people in the world are going to be much better able to pay that food price increase. Europe, North America, etc. Some places, especially sub-Saharan Africa, it's going to be killing people. I mean, not to be hyperbolic here. We are talking, like, you know, the possibility of famine, you know, and not just one or two, like, thousands. We're talking, it could be huge, you know what I mean? And this is a global disaster. And the problem is that I don't, honestly, like I talked about it a couple of weeks ago, I don't see how this ends. I just don't know how it ends.
No, nor do I.
There's a very good point that I just want to... I did the translation, particularly for South Africa, of... You're buying petrol here at 360 a gallon. It might be going up, you know, each petrol station can put their own price on. That's how free it is here. But let's call it 360, which translates to 16 Rand a litre. You know, that's what it is. So that's what they pay. We're going up to 26 Rand a litre in Johannesburg, in South Africa. But there's another thing, and you mentioned it. You actually pointed out this. They can afford it. They earn four times more than we do. You know, the average American salary is around about R1 million a year, plus 1.1 million. Well, that in South Africa, it works out at 300,000 or something. So that's the mean across all the income earners.
I doubt it's 300,000 for South Africans.
Well, I'm being generous. I'm being very generous. Yeah. You know what I mean? I'm being very, from that point of view, you know where I'm going to, because obviously even those who are earning a few million only fill up their tanks. You know, they use as much petrol as the person at the bottom end of the scale and that. So from a South Africa's point of view, and Viv mentions, you know, emerging markets, emerging countries, they're going to take one hell of a, you know, slam. And even the JSE is actually holding up a lot better than I thought it would. You know, Lindsay, the governor spoke today. I think he was very well balanced in that, but hawkish. You know, rates obviously didn't go down. Yeah. But I think he's got a very, there are two things in South Africa is obviously number one, supply. And the other is price and how this translates and how this filters through to our whole economy, particularly where we use, you know, people use taxis every day to get into town, to get to their jobs, you know, backwards and forwards and so on. I mean, the impact on the low level of earners is going to be enormous.
Tell me something, and it's open to both of you. Inelastic demand for oil is one thing. You've also got a relatively inelastic demand for food. You have to eat. Also shelter. You have to have a roof over your head. Yeah. So that's essentially, I suppose, the three areas that can't be skimped upon in your household budget. If therefore one of them, oil, goes shooting up, it takes away from the discretionary spend on other things, you know, like David going off to having a cappuccino, etc. So there are certain areas of goods that are going to experience lower demand and therefore deflation. So the oil price going up, although statistically means CPI goes higher, in reality, certain people's baskets go down because prices are going down because they're not buying the stuff anymore. David, you're agreeing with me here.
Absolutely right. That's what we don't understand. You know, the bulk of the people can handle it. I mean, sorry, a very few people can handle it. But for the bulk of the people, it's going to have an enormous impact on, you know, maybe those who get a social grant of a few hundred rand a month or so on, you know, they'll continue to buy their vegetables and hopefully places like Checkers or ShopRite and that will keep those prices of absolute essentials down, you know, won't pass it on as they have done in the past. But I mean but even if you take logistic companies, if you take getting everything to harbor or something, the increase in price just eats into margins dramatically. And the other one, as Viv said, is fertilizer and chemicals. You know, we underestimate the impact that this has on the chemical prices as well, because oil is always a massive input into that area.
Okay, it all looks very grim.
It really does.
And I think there'll be strategists and people even cleverer than you two sitting down and saying, what does this mean for our portfolios? I've spoken to two portfolio managers, one in London and one in South Africa, who have been long of this market in various ways, whether it be copper, gold, or platinum group metals producers, and they said we've been really active in the last month. We have now gone overweight here and underweight there, etc. And I won't say what it is and who they were, but there have been significant changes. People are positioning themselves for a different future. People that think they're clever anyway are positioning themselves for a different future. Viv, I'm going to go to you now because I'm going to ask you, have you positioned yourself differently over the last month since this war began?
Yes. I mean, look, on a personal level, I bought an electric car.
Which one have you got? Please tell us which one you bought. What did you buy?
If you're going electric, you have to get the Chinese brands. I got a Chery. So it's basically quite cheap. It's not like cheap for like, you know, obviously we are more provisions up front here, but compared to like what you would consider the comparable kind of things out there from like a BMW or
this is a hybrid a though, hey?
It's a hybrid, yeah. It's a hybrid.
Yeah, it's a hybrid.
It's plug-in hybrid. So you can plug it into the, your electricity supply if you have solar, or you can put petrol in. But I think what I wanted to mention here is that we talk about petrol. The diesel price is going up more than 50%, 50% next week. Yeah. Okay. Now, as much as petrol is like, you know, from a personal point of view, you feel petrol, but diesel is by far the most important source of power in the world. It's tractors, it's bulldozers, it's trucks, it's planes, it's ships, it's mining equipment. All these things are diesel. The price of diesel is going up 50+% from 18 to 28. Okay, next week. Okay, that's basically well more than 50%. So it's about 60% up next week. Already, we started to see in South Africa pumps. There's questions about people basically, you know, stockpiling it. Because remember, if you're on a farm or you're in a construction place, not taking your bulldozer or your tractor to the petrol station, you're taking a tank, you know what I mean, and filling it up there. And these guys have the ability to go and buy. If you had a 1,000-liter tank, basically you're paying 18,000 rands this week. Next week you'll be paying 28,000 rands for a 1,000-liter tank of diesel. That's a huge, huge, you know, thing. So we are going to see it come through in a very big way. But in terms of my own personal thing, I've got a lot more cautious for clients. I've argued like in the last like week or two, the last month or two actually, that I think that, you know, having things that are more capital protected, you know, basically capping upside for, you know, protection of your capital is probably a good idea right now. The last year we had, you know, the local stock market went 50% in dollars, 50% in dollars. We had, you know, huge returns in Europe. We had, you know, even this US, which is basically the laggard in the world, was still up double digits, you know, which is unusual. Mm. Usually positive in terms of like just how the average return of the US markets usually are. But this next couple of years is probably not going to be like that, unless we have like the AI revolution coming about and really pushing things to new levels. But I do think this is the case. We are going to see uncertainty really skyrocket over the next couple of months, because I still think when you watch big traders in the US, you watch people in the markets, they're still talking about a quick solution to this. And I don't know what the quick solution is. I think the Iranians right now are looking at themselves and saying, we now control 20% of the world's oil, right? We are the largest, you know, have the control of the largest amount of oil in the world, more than the US, more than Russia, more than anybody. We basically are making more money now than we were in the past. Like it's $136 million a day they're making at the moment. And also, if we give in to these guys, we are probably going to die. You know, that's the answer to it. Right? And that's just the Iranians. The Chinese are looking at this and saying, the Americans are about to get into a new, Vietnam. The Russians are saying to themselves, well, we basically have ended all the stuff. The Indians are saying to themselves, we listened to the Americans and cut off our Russian supply. And now we have, by some measures, maybe a month or so of reserves left over, you know, and Europe and Africa and the whole world is readjusting. And quite frankly, Trump, I think, like I said, after the next, the next couple of months is going to be virtually a lame duck. Okay. So that's another aspect to look at as well. And unfortunately, as David said, the people that are coming on the other side, the Democrats, were probably going to win the next election. Unfortunately, not really going towards the place you want to be. You want some centrist people. You want some people that are going to come about and basically be in the middle. And unfortunately, what's happened here is that people are just going to the bases, and you're going to have some of the most left-wing communist people ever being elected to Congress and to Senate. And the people that are going to run for the U.S. presidency from the left are not the central people. They are going to be people that are going to be much more left-wing than you've ever had in the past.
Hmm. Okay.
There's a good article by David Brooks, who I don't know if anyone's read him. I think he wrote it in The Atlantic. He calls it, America needs what he calls a trimmer, someone in the middle. You know, who listens to both sides and adjusts, can swing, doesn't matter, you know, but still does it for the people, you know, can. He gave an example, and I'm trying to think in politics of where he went all the way back to James II when William the Orange. When James II was exiled to France and William of Orange was invited to be King of England. This is in the late 1600s, I think. Well, Lindsay, you know your English history a lot.
No, I drifted off when you mentioned English history, actually. Sorry, David, I didn't like my history teacher.
But, I mean, he mentioned that the Duke of Halifax was in the middle. He supported both sides, and they called him a trimmer. And I think America needs someone like that who can come in the middle and bring both sides together. There's one point I must make. America's got as much oil as it wants. It's got as much diesel as it wants. But you pay the international price.
Hmm.
There's no shortage. It's just that because that's what economics is about, and that's what free markets are. Even though they're producing as much as they need and they've got as much power as they need, you pay a much higher price, and that is going to have an effect. Also, they're almost immune from the rest of the world because they're not an exporting nation in terms of it. You know, they can survive. And that's one of the dangers of all of this, is that you don't feel it in the streets here. You know, you're not going to feel it in the streets as much as you feel it in the rest of the world. And I think Europe is very, very vulnerable, you know, for the reasons that we've discussed here as well, and emerging markets, particularly emerging Africa.
Okay.
I think those are the weak points of all of this.
Okay. The question that I put to Viv, and he neatly sidestepped it, except right at the end when he said there was a note of caution. He said he'd bought a cherry or something. David, what about you? Are you still stoically for your portfolio? It's well positioned, and you think it might even not be war proof, but more resilient to the war and the effect of the war, the long term effects of the war, than most other portfolios.
I think so. You know, I'm very concentrated in the choices that we make, and I'm not quite prepared to forfeit them at these kind of levels. Also, you know, when you forfeit them and sell, you pay huge amounts of tax, and then when you want to come in, you know, you'll end up coming in at perhaps higher prices than you went out. But I'm not buying anything at the moment, and I'm not putting fresh money in. I'm staying where we are at the moment, you know, just watching how this plays out. Viv is right, I think, saying that I think what the market is doing at the moment, it's pricing, or was this you, Lindsay, pricing in a quick end? That's why prices are holding.
I think it just looks back at previous experiences with war and other geopolitical events and even liberation days, and they say, oh, it doesn't matter, it's all going to blow over. Well, I just want to read you something that came up on LinkedIn today, and it's via TikTok. So it's two social media platforms coming together, and it says, this is from Putin. Listen carefully, Mr. Trump. Hitting Iran very hard. Let me start it again. Sorry, it's going very quickly. Listen carefully, because this message is direct. You speak about hitting Iran hard. You talk about destruction, more bombs. Let me remind you of something important. History has seen many leaders who believed they could control the fire of war, and every one of them learned the same lesson. Fire spreads. Iran must surrender. You say Iran is finished, but war in the Middle East is not a television show, and it's not a business deal that can be won with threats. If the US continues this reckless path, if Washington pushes the region closer to chaos, then do not be surprised when the consequences travel far beyond Iran. Russia will not watch silently while other nations are threatened with destruction. The world is already standing on the edge. My advice is simple. Stop speaking the language of bombs before the world answers back in the language of war, because once that door opens, no president, no army, and no superpower will easily close it again. Now remember that, Mr. Trump. And that is supposed to be what Putin said in the last 24 hours. Whether it's been claimed by him or not, whether it's true, I don't know.
Hello. I was thinking about a pot and kettle here. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was
going to
say hello.
But it's very interesting that Donald Trump is the only person in the world that can make you like Putin and make you think, oh, Mr. Putin's actually right this time. It's extraordinary.
I doubt whether he would have said anything like that.
No, I doubt it as well.
Who went on to Ukraine and who's battling at the moment, losing thousands of soldiers a day. Yeah.
But there was a lot of sense in whoever said that.
I don't think he's got the energy to divert his attention elsewhere. He's still trying to beat off Ukraine, which is now 4 years old.
Yes, it is 4 years and 1.5 months, actually. Yeah, it's horrible. Let's have a look at the markets now. The dollar rand is 17.04. That didn't last long, did it? British pound against the rand, 22.76. Euro rand, 19.68. Euro dollar, 115.50. The gold price. This is weird. It doesn't respond to it. It responds in completely the opposite way that it should do. In other words, geopolitical tension rises, i.e. the war against Iran. It should be rising, but because the dollar rises, the dollar is now the recipient of safe haven funds, and therefore the gold price goes down. So gold is $44.50, down 1.2%. platinum down another 4% now at 1850. David, you were calling this 3-4 weeks ago. Palladium 1367 down 4.6%. Let's have a look at the all important oil price and a couple of other things as well. Brent crude oil spot price 107.78. You'll see that the market is in what's called a backwardation. In other words, the spot price is higher than the futures prices. So if you look at your futures price on a site like investing.com, it's something like $101. But the actual spot price, if you want to buy oil now, it's close to $108 a barrel. West Texas crude, $94.31. That's 4.4% higher. Brent, incidentally, is up 5.5%. Natural gas prices up 2%. Gasoline, $3.13 a gallon, up nearly 4%. Heating oil up 6.5%. Copper price down 0.8%, $5.48. South African 10-year bond yield after the Reserve Bank today left rates unchanged, 8.99%, which is also unchanged on the day. US 10-year, 4.39%, recent high about 4.45. S&P 500 futures down 0.7%, 65.94 for the June futures. And the Bitcoin price doesn't know whether it likes war or doesn't like war. It's 69,046, which is down 2.5%. David, have you been looking at the JSE today, or have you been worrying about other things?
No, no.
Have you seen any? Have you seen any shares moving up or down that surprised you or didn't surprise you?
Well, I'm at the bottom. What's interesting is that exactly what we said when we were talking about who would be the best place to be would be in like ShopRite or Boxer or Pick and Pay at the bottom end of the grocery market, or in the grocery market rather than in clothing. So on the top end you've got ShopRite and Boxer, and the bottom end you've got Mr. Price and Truworths and retailers like that, who I think are going to clothing retailers who are likely to suffer more than perhaps the grocers. So just a quick observation, but the JSE was down just 1.25%, which I thought held up better than I would expected more of a sell-off, but it's widespread right across the board. Everything's down. Volume's still quite good, Lindsay. We're seeing 28 billion trade there, but there's a lot of speculation, on a day-to-day basis. And naturally, with that gold price not performing, I think it's done. I think you can, it's more likely to be 3,000 than it is going to be 5,000 or 5,500, any new highs. Same with platinum. I think once the speculators get hurt, they don't come back quickly, and also they've got to lick their wounds. They're caught by margin.
You're quite right. Yeah, it's a psychological thing now. Once you've lost once, you don't go straight back in there. Once bitten, twice shy. I think the phrase is on the board on the day. We've got ShopRite up 3.75%, Boxer up 3.3%. Tungela is either up or it's down. This thing, depending on Mr. Trump, 2.4% higher. Sasol up nearly 2%, R219.50 per share. Mr. Price down 3.7%. Anglo-American down 3.33%, Valterra 3.2% in the red, Impala Platinum, same thing, and Naspers coming in with a 2.9% loss. Viv, if you were a social media tech company, if you were a Google or a Meta or even YouTube, would you be worried about what happened yesterday, that ruling in Los Angeles?
Yes, I would. I mean, remember, there's been cases in the past. I mean, remember the Talking Powder case for Johnson & Johnson, you can recall the breast implant cases as well back in the day. Especially mental health, it's going to be very hard to prove things. And in those cases, like the talc powder case and the breast implant cases, the science was quite weak in terms of proving causation. How are you going to prove causation in terms of why are you depressed? The social media, how can you be certain that the social media caused your depression?
Yes.
But I do think that, first of all, these guys are unliked, and so they are likely to face some kind of thing. You saw Elon Musk, for instance, recently lose the case for the Twitter, acquisition, where it was $2 billion there, I think, that they went against him for. Again, I think it's basically a case where you're unpopular, you're not going to get too much support from the public, and therefore you're probably going to face a lot of these kind of cases coming forward. And jury cases are probably going to rule against the rich guy in favor of the poor young, the poor person that you can say was harmed by this thing. So yeah, I do think it's going to be an issue. And if you call back, I mean, people are mentioning the tobacco cases. I think that's the kind of stuff that you might find happening here as well, especially as these companies become more and more powerful with AI, et cetera, into the future.
Thank you very much for that, gentlemen. Thank you very much for we went round the houses today, didn't we, with all sorts of we had fake TikTok Putin speeches. We've had doom and gloom. We've had electric cars and everything. It's really interesting. And I think a lot of the things that we've said today are going to come to fruition. In other words, this is not going to be a quick in and out like Venezuela. It is going to become protracted. Just a question of who cleans up the mess and how the markets react. But I firmly believe that there's more to come. There's too much sanguine behaviour from the really big players like BlackRock with $14 trillion. And I saw an interview with one of actually the CEO of BlackRock yesterday, and he almost said if it continues, then our policy changes completely. So anyway, we'll find out. Thank you very much again, Viv Govender, Usman Rand Swiss, David Shapiris from Sasfin Securities, and that was the 5 o'clock shadow. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.